Okay, so you guys saw the psukim in Ezra. So let's look at the psukim in Ezra, and let us try to understand what's going on. So before we look at the psukim, since this was asked in Seder, and I'm just going to assume that most of you have the same question, who is Ezra and when does he live? Who is Ezra in Tanakh and when did he live? Hi, Ezra. Named for this Ezra. Not so fair. When does he live? Thank you. That's very good. What? He's the beginning of the building of the second Beit HaMikdash. So what we call Tkufat Shivat Zion, the period of the return to Zion, meaning that includes everything, because they're building the Beit HaMikdash, they're building the walls of Yerushalayim, but that whole period. So that's when he is. He's the beginning of Tkufat Bayit Sheni, of Shivat Zion. Ezra is the best.
Yeah.
He's just the best. Yes, you too, Ezra. But this Ezra is the best of the best of the best. Everyone knows that. It's one of those rare cases where everybody knows that he's the best. He's basically appointed by the king as Talmud Chacham, because it's not just the Jews who know that he's the best, but everybody knows he's the biggest Talmud Chacham. It's like obvious to everybody. And that's what happens, is that... Okay, so Ezra lives in the time where the king... now, I don't want to get into the whole story of Sefer Ezra, but basically Cyrus, right, Koresh, is the one who says, go rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, because God told me that I should let you build the Beit HaMikdash, and it happens to be historically, we know that this actually happened, right? We actually have the Cyrus cylinder, where the only difference is that in Tanakh it says Yudke Vavke, but in the original it says that Cyrus declares that Marduk told me that I should let all the nations that I've conquered go back and build their temples. But then it gets paused, then it gets started again, paused, started, because of all types of political fights that happened in Eretz Yisrael at the time. In Perek Zion and Ezra, we pick up that they're actually going and they are building they're going back to engage in the building of the Beit HaMikdash and that entire project. And in that context, you get the following story. What happens? So Artaxerxes, right, Artaxasta, the king, issues a decree. And what is his decree? What, Ezra? No taxes for who? Very good. So let's read it. So he says in Pasuk Chav Gimel and on. Kol di mintam eloshmaya yitaved itradzda levek eloshmaya dilemalehevek saf amalchut malka uvenohi. So now I hope that when I say that there's real Aramaic and there's Gemara Aramaic, this is real Aramaic. Gemara Aramaic is like the Yiddish of Aramaic. It's like a little bit of Hebrew, a little bit of Aramaic, more slangy. What? Yeah, that's exactly what it is, like Yiddish. It's like Yiddish is Judeo-German, so the Gemara is Judeo-Aramaic. Real Aramaic is like what you get here, or more in Targum. So, and Ezra has much in Aramaic, yes.
It's literally Yerushalmi's Aramaic?
It's closer, it's earlier. No, it's also, it's not as pure.
Okay.
Right? The pure. It's not as early, right? Meaning it's still Judeo-Aramaic. It's Israeli Judeo-Aramaic rather than Babylonian Judeo-Aramaic.
Okay.
Right? It's like high Yiddish and low Yiddish. I don't know. Is there such a thing? I have no idea. I have no idea. What? I think there is such a thing. What? Yeah, I'm saying Galicianer Yiddish and Litvish Yiddish and Hasidish Yiddish and all the Yiddishes, which are themselves, you know, Judeo-German. Sure, I have no idea. And then he says, Ulochom mehodin, dicholkanaya vilevaya, zamaraya taraaya, nitinaya ufalche beit elahadine minda vlo, vahalach lo shalit, nirmirme, alehom. Va'ant Ezra kechachmat elahach di viyadach many shaftin vidayanin, dilevavan dunin lecholamedi ba'avid nahara lecholyade datech elahach vidi lo yadat ehodiun. So I'm sure you all understood what I just said. What? Yes. You don't even know if I read the psukim. You have no idea. I could have said basically whatever I wanted there. I could have insulted you all in Aramaic. You would have had no idea if I was capable of doing such things. So what does he say? So he, in the context of this, he says, there's a Kohanim, Levim, etc., all people who work in the Beit HaMikdash, it will not be lawful to impose any levy, tax, or duty. And that is what the king says. That is the decree of Atarchashta. Adam. Yes, very good. So, very good. So let us talk about this for a second. So the Gemara here brings a proof from this pasuk, which first of all, Adam notes is very odd, because, yes, we have just paskined, like, Artachshasta. Harav Hagoin, Artachshasta. Which is weird. Which is weird. What else is weird about this pasuk? There are at least three things that jump to me that are weird. One is, yes, we are paskining like Artachshasta. Yes, Yonatan. Very good. It doesn't limit itself at all. All taxes, levies, and duties, all, they are exempt, which is not seemingly what our Gemara is talking about. And, yes, Ezra. It's not talking about the Milchama, it's talking about Kohanim and Levim. And, four, what is the logic for exempting them? Right. It sounds like they are working in the Beit HaMikdash, which... what does that mean? Why does that exempt them? Andrew. So one possibility is that we don't want to take away from their time. What's another possibility? Very good. They already have a job, right? They're already doing their work in a different way. Now, what did you want to say, Avi? Okay, right, meaning either we want them to encourage them to work faster, or they already have a job, and therefore they're fulfilling their duty to society in a different way. Adam, Yonatan? Yeah, so it sounds like, yeah, sounds like all taxes, right? If I say you are exempt, taxes, levies, duties, that's how it's translated here. Okay, so we could limit it, but he doesn't, right? It's definitely more expensive than security tax. Let's put it that way. Okay? There are more taxes going on here that they're exempt from. What? We don't. That's my point. The Gemara, and this is my point, is now let's bring it back to the Gemara. What's my problem? My problem is very simple, right? Remember, this pasuk is supposed to be brought as a proof that Talmid Chachamim are exempt from security tax because they don't need protection. And instead, we introduce the psak of Harava Goin Artaxasta, Hamelech, right? Artaxerxes. Rabbi Artaxerxes, okay? Yes, exactly. Rabbi Dr. Lord Artaxerxes. Yes, exactly. Except technically, the next pasuk is appointing Ezra to that position of rabbi, lord, chief rabbi. I mean, that's what he was. He was chief rabbi appointed by the government. That's exactly what he was. So, yes, it's weird, as Adam says, that Artaxerxes here is a postake. But it's also weird because, first of all, we're bringing a proof from Kohanim and Levim about Talmid Chachamim. Strange. We're bringing a proof ostensibly for security tax, except this is clearly more expansive than that. And the logic has something to do with them working in the Beit HaMikdash, which is either that we don't want to take them away from time, as Andrew suggests, or as Ezra suggests, that, no, they're already fulfilling their duty to society by doing something else. Right? Or as Gavi said, it will take them away from Avot and the Beit HaMikdash, which seems, none of those reasons seem to have anything to do with they don't need security because they are already protected. Adam. You are too polite. Yeah, Ezra, go ahead. Since Adam has ceded the floor.
Could you say that it's kind of also taking security for them is just basically a proxy taking security for God? Is there being...
Oh, very good. So Ezra says, well, is the fact that they work, is it, as he said before, is that the reason? The siba for their exemption, or is it a siman, right? The fact that they work for God indicates something, right? Like they represent God. And the problem isn't that they already contribute to society, but it's an honor problem because they're taking from God or whatever you think the problem is taking from God, right? Let's say an honor problem, respect problem, I don't know. Right, meaning, right, it's a hierarchical problem, right? Is that God is above on the totem pole. Okay, very good. Adam.
How are we defining somebody
that's having?
Are those people whose job it is
the
special thing, or is it people who just have a lot of knowledge?
Oh, very good. And, as Adam correctly notes, the question we got to ask here is maybe this tells us something about the type of Talmud Chacham we're talking about. Are we talking about someone simply by dint of his knowledge? Or is it something, I don't know, a functioning rabbi, right? A professional Jew, right? What? What did you say? Well, look, let's be honest, right? There is a nickname, right? There is a nickname of sorts or that is often utilized in the Jewish community to describe professional Jews, which is Clay Kodesh, right? Which captured the fact that there is this idea that they are, right, essentially functioning as part of, like, the Beit HaMikdash, right? NYU, President Joel, before President Berman, liked to talk about that he wanted people to be both Clay Kodesh and Lay Kodesh, right, to sort of blur the line, right, between professional Jews and non-professional Jews, the point being everyone contributes to the community, right? But there is this notion, the fact that people will refer to rabbis as Clay Kodesh, as there is this sort of idea that they are functioning in this Levi Kohen role, etc. Oh, very good, very good, very good, very good. Okay, so good. Let's bring everything we've seen so far together, okay? So let me remind you what we've seen the last 2 days and what we have to now do conceptually. Got to piece it together. So we started with a claim in the Gemara that Talmidei Chachamim are exempt from the taxes for security because they don't need protection. We said if you just stop there, the thesis seems very simple, and that is the thesis that bothered Yaakov very much, which was clearly the Gemara doesn't believe in communal responsibility. It believes that taxes are basically a function of me paying for the things I utilize, and therefore, if I don't need it, I don't pay for it. Let everybody else suffer and figure it out for themselves, right? That is basically the crudest way of articulating that. And we said there's a lot of problems with this, right? One was Yaakov's problem, which is, why don't we have a notion of communal responsibility, right? Why would, right? But then we said there are a lot of other problems, right? There's theological problems, which we haven't talked about yet, which is, why don't rabbis assume they need security? What type of Talmud Chacham are we talking about? But then there was the question, who are we really talking about? A Talmud Chacham, a Tzaddik, and why? And which type of Talmud Chacham? And we said, at first glance, the Gemara introduces this notion that whoever it is because they don't need protection. And it's only security tax. However, normally, and this is a good rule in life, if you say I'm going to prove it, the proof that you provide should prove the thesis that you are trying to prove. And yet, the Gemara seems to take that rule and throw it in the garbage, because it quotes a bunch of psukim, the first of which has nothing to do with Tamid Chachamim by the Gemara's own admission, and has to do with Tzadikim, right? And then we have these proofs that introduce other notions, like maybe it's about service. We're not even talking about Talmud Chacham. We're not clear what service is about here, right? It could be that it's about honor, like Ezra said, that no, the fact that they work for God indicates that they represent God, and therefore it's dishonorable to collect taxes for them. But that's a different notion, that they don't need protection, and would open up the possibility that in fact is the case in Ezra, that the exemption is broader than security tax. Or Ezra's other formulation, which was maybe it's saying this isn't really an exemption, it's a replacement tax, meaning everyone has to do, either they have to work in the, even they have to go to the army if they do Shirut Lumi, right? So, if you do Shirut Lumi, so it's even broader, and maybe you'll end up in, or whatever, even within the Tzava, there are the five people every year who are part of Rabbanut Tzvait, that their service in the army is to be the rabbi in the army, right? So you're not really saying they're exempt, you're saying they're doing a different job, they're contributing to society in a different way. Or, as Andrew and Gabi said in different ways, maybe the logic here is, we want people to be learning Torah, we don't want to take away from it. But all of those svaras are very different than they don't need security, and are broader than an exemption from security tax. Because ostensibly, it should apply to real estate tax, and who knows what else, income tax. And, you know, who knows what, right? The problem is that we then have to deal with the fact that the Gemara clearly does see some limits on this tax. And then we have to deal with the fact that the Gemara itself introduces, in the case of the cisterns, this notion that they are obligated because they need water, which goes back to the thesis that Yaakov didn't like, which is taxes is just about what you need and you're paying for it in a different way. But then the Gemara immediately turns around and says, but if the minhag in this place is not to pay people to dig the cisterns, but to have a labor division, then Tamid Chachamim are exempt because it's not right for them to go and work. They don't normally do it, which either means what Ezra says, which is it's not mechubad for them to be engaged in labor, and therefore they're exempt, or it means what Andrew said, which is, we're willing to say that they should pay money for things they actually need, but we're not willing to take away their time from Torah, and therefore if the way people contribute is in time, then they're exempt. So what you have is this complexity, is that the Gemara started with one thesis, but by the time you go through the Pesukim, and the Gemara's own claims, we're no longer clear if we're talking about Talmidei Chachamim, professional Jews, tzaddikim. We're not clear whether the exemption is only about security and a lack of need, or kavod, or we don't want to take them away from Torah, and how these interact, right? The Gemara never articulates, but if you read carefully, suddenly you realize there's a lot of conceptual models that are flying around, and there are real nafkaminis to these questions, right? Like, as Adam said, which Talmud Chacham are we talking about? Or as we said multiple times, which taxes are we talking about? Yes, Yonatan.
Can we say, we get a sense that it can be something about taking away the time because why does the service, we can't make them labor, but we can make them pay, and if they have money, I guess.
Correct. So Yonatan says it must be more about honor, because if it was about time, in the end of the day, if someone needs, right? If someone is going to have to, if he gives up $100 and now he needs to work an extra hour or two, I'm blessing you all that that's how much you make per hour, right? you're like, what do you mean? I want to be a lawyer. I want to make $500 an hour. Fine. Whatever it is, right? Right, Jonathan's right. I mean, if you think it's about diminishing the time they have for learning, so time is money. Right? This is an organizing metaphor of our life. There's an excellent book about this written in the 80s on this point, about regular metaphors and super metaphors that are organizing metaphors through which we view the entire world. One of the examples is time is money, right? Where we basically, our entire life, even though we don't realize it, is organized by this metaphor, right? And we don't realize how much we use this metaphor, right? So things like, right, things like, I'll give you of my time. How much time, right? The fact that we give time, it took time, right? It costs time. Yeah, because we really think this way, right? In that sense. Okay. But yes, Yonatan is 100% correct. That might push us towards the model of honor and not really about just tracking time. Maybe. Right? Maybe. Yes, Ezra. No. Okay. So we'll see. We'll see. Okay. We'll see. Okay. So all of this, now we can start pinning things down. Very good. Now, probably a good way of proving that I'm not completely insane in what we've been talking about for the last 2.5 hours is by looking at the Rambam. So who bothered to open their Rambam and look up these halachot? Good. Who has their one-volume Rambam? If you don't, take 1 minute, go run and get your one-volume Rambam because it's going to be very helpful. And I'm going to prove to you that my last 3 hours of analysis are not completely insane, right? If you want to pull it up in Safari, you can. What? Well, I'm going to show you 3 Rambams and prove to you that I'm not totally crazy. Shchein. What? No, that's fine. But on this one, I made sure to get this one so that I could tell you what page it is here, right? And I want to prove to you that I'm not completely lunatic, okay? If you thought I was. Maybe you did, I don't know. Which is totally fair. But I want to prove to you that I'm not just taking you on this just to stretch your minds. I'm doing it because I actually think there's a lot of truth in what we just did, okay? So, I want to read with you 3 halachot. 3 halachot in Rambam, okay? Let's start with Perek Vav, Hilchot Shcheinim, Halacha Vav. Yes, page 1029 in your one-volume Rambam, second column, first line. This is why I said it's just easier for you because I took the time to find it in this so I could tell you exactly where to look. Okay, what? Kol Advarim. Very good. So, first, let's look at the Rambam in Hilchot Shcheinim. And I want you, when we read it, to tell me what type of tax the Rambam thinks we're talking about and what the nature of the exemption is. Adam, take it away. So, Hilchot Shcheinim, these are the laws of neighborly laws. So this is the exact right question. So, first question first. The fact that the halacha we're about to read in Hilchot Shcheinim tells you that what is the nature of this halacha that we're about to read? It's a neighborly law, meaning this is where the Rambam talked about communal responsibilities. Okay, which makes sense. So, Adam, take it away. What does the Rambam say? Page 1029, Vav, top of the column on the left. Yeah? The fee Shane, right? Good. First half of the halacha in Rambam. The Rambam says what, Adam? That what tax are we talking about? Only? Dirty tax. And what is the logic that Talmidei Chachamim are exempt from? They don't need security. So this half, first half of the Halacha and Rambam is the pure, very simple translation of the opening statement of the Gemara. Right? It's about need. They don't need it. They don't pay for it. Nikuda, sof sipur. That's it. That's the first half of this Halacha. Second half of the Halacha, Adam. Good, but to fix the roads, even Talmidei Chachamim are chayev. Why? Very simple. Well, why? Now tell me, before you read. Because they need it. They travel. Talmidei Chachamim also travel. Right? Very good. Next line. Very good. Then what? Okay. So now the Rambam says, but if it's a labor tax, so now the Rambam says, why don't they go out, Adam? It is not honorable. So now the Rambam tells you, factor two, that from the vantage point of taxes, are they obligated to pay for roads? Yes. What is the only reason they wouldn't? In the labor tax. And why does the Rambam think that's the case? Because it's not mechubad. That's what the Rambam reads factor two at the end of the Gemara. Okay? Yes, Jonathan.
If you have this idea that you don't pay taxes for something that you are not using, why then are we talking specifically about the case of Tom Harbaugh and not just saying, if you don't.
So that's a good question, right? It could be that this is not really about need, right? That could, right? Or it could be because you can't just tell everybody, right? You can't have a free-for-all. You can't just say, oh, you don't need it personally, right? That's not how taxes work. Meaning, right, we can say a certain class of people, right, doesn't partake in it, right? It's the, right, look, it's, Lidugma. It would be like people saying, look, real estate taxes go in large part to fund public schools. It would be complete chaos if we said, well, if you don't have a kid in school right now, go, that you don't have to pay real estate tax. But what we can do that's not completely crazy is, give vouchers to people who have kids in school age to utilize that money if they're not utilizing it in school, but they actually do need the money, right, to pay for school, to give them vouchers. Now, why don't we just say, well, anybody who doesn't have a kid in the public school is putter from real estate tax, right? Because we can't quite do that, meaning there is some notion in which the society needs to fund society, but we're willing to say that maybe if someone really doesn't need it, so we give them a rebate, a refund, a voucher, right? That's different than just simply saying anyone who doesn't need it, because that's chaos, right? Okay. So you could imagine another class of people being like that, right? You could imagine it, right? Yes, Adam. Right, that's exactly the question. We could imagine that in that case, right, if we really think that what we learn here is just that anybody, anytime there's a class of people who doesn't need something, they're exempt, right? We could talk about it. It might be true. I don't know if it would be true. What? Correct, that too, right? And that's part of the complexity here, so. Right, meaning if they had like a, right, you could ask, what, do you have a gated community within a community? Right, something like that. That, and then you have to ask, and is the exemption because they don't need it? Is the exemption because, no, by gating themselves off, they're now a different city for these purposes, right? I remember, like, in Rambam, if you walk around, there's enough of those gated communities in a 10-minute walk, you know, where they do exactly that. I remember walking around those. Yeah. We would tax them, but we don't make them work because it's a lack of kavod. Right? So the Rambam comes down on that side. The issue here is kavod. Okay? This is the Rambam in Hilchot Shchenim. But now I want you to turn to the Rambam in Hilchot Talmud Torah. Okay? So open to page 130. To Perek Vav Halacha Yod in Hilchot Talmud Torah. And now I want you to tell me if what you just heard is identical to what we just read. Yonadan, why don't you take it away? No, 130. 130. So go back 900 pages, right? Perek Vav Halacha Yud, right? Right-hand column. Okay, who wants to take it? Yeah, go ahead. So what does he say? Tami Yechamim, they don't what?
They don't work with the Amar.
Right, to not degrade them. So this is identical to the end of the other halacha. But now watch what the Rambam does. Okay, stop. And we don't collect for walls, gates, or guards. Okay, so now why would you say that's true?
They don't need it.
They don't need it. Very good. So far, is anything here contradictory, additional to what we saw in Shchenim? Not at all. Now continue. Right? Nor to the presents that we give to the king. Right? And we don't make him pay taxes. Bein masu kasov b'nei ha'ir. Whether it's something that's set by city. Bein masu kasov al kalish v'ish. Or if it's a personal tax. Shnei emar. Visarim. Right? Okay. So now the Rambam says, nor do we obligate them in any taxes. Why? Which pasuk does he quote? The one we actually skipped, which is the second group, the one in Hosea. Right? Because this was also in the Gemara, where the Gemara just says, right? So how did the Gemara understand that pasuk in Hosea? Right? Which is right, attack of Zimim Ma'ad Mehem, Yechalim Ma'asam, Melech Visarim. Right, which is, sorry, so what is Rashi, how does Rashi read it? Even though they're few, what is it? They're exempt from paying for the king's thing. And then what does he say? V'chein. And similarly, what? Right? If he is a businessman, so then what do we let him do? First, we give him the first right of sale. We don't let anybody else sell until he's sold. And if he had a court case, right, he comes to court, there's a whole people, there's, you know, 10 cases to be heard that day, we hear his first. So now, Rambam in Hilchot Talmud Torah, Yonatan, tell me, does the Rambam limit himself to security tax? Not at all. Oh, very good. So it's very clear that the Rambam here thinks What? Oh, definitely an elitist, yes. But the Rambam thinks that in addition to the layer of exemption they get because of need, there's another reason that Talmidei Chachamim are exempt from taxes, and that is? And that, what is the svara?
That because they're called the poor, so they don't need to pay taxes.
Because? Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
How do I know that it's about honor? And subsequent statements, because all of them, because what does the Rambam say? They don't pay taxes, and if they show up in court, you get them go first, you let them do business first. What is the Rambam saying? That their exemption from taxes is? Yeah. Is it also a function of their kavod, and therefore, is there enough kamina for the Rambam? Yes, it's much more expensive. Right? It's not just security tax. And what's the Rambam's proof? Which pasuk? The pasuk from Hosea, which talks about Talmidei Chachamim being pater from what the kings pay. And where does the Rambam get the notion that it might be about kavod? He already told you, from the case of the cisterns. Right? Now, yes, Adam. Turn to one more Rambam. Turn to page 661. No, before a question, turn to page 661. What? Yes, go. Clarification, sure. See, that's funny, right? Because he says explicitly they do.
Yeah.
So it's not all taxes. It's certain types of taxes, right, from the king. Right? So, very good. So what does that sound like? What does the Rambam think? That they do have to pay things that they need. But when it's something they don't need, right? Because a tax from the king is not for needs, right? So if you want to conceptualize, what is the Rambam saying? A needs-based tax, so then, taxes that are defined as need-based, so then, the reason you pay them is because you need them, and a reason to be exempt is you don't need them. But a tax from the king, why do you pay it? Right, it's tribute because the government needs to pay it, the community needs to take care of it. And why does the Rambam say Talmidei Chachamim are exempt from that? It sounds like it's, but let's sharpen it. What is the kavod? It's the responsibility of the, right? Either it's the responsibility of the community to honor them by not making them be involved with this, or it's beneath the Talmidei Chachamim to be subject to that type of tax. But if it's a tax which is need-based, which the Talmidei Chachamim actually need, so then it's not beneath their honor because they're paying for services, right? And that, a service tax, that makes sense, right? As long as they need it. But a tax which is about tribute, where it's honor-related, so then either it's beneath them to be subject to the king, or the community should be respecting them by taking care of them, taking care of their needs. But Adam notes, but what about the third possibility that emerged from Hosea, which is maybe the reason Talmidei Chachamim are exempt is because they already contribute to society in other ways. Yes, Ezra? No, not in the same way. It's not the same, right? A tax of I need a wall is different than if you don't give me money, I'll beat you up. That's a different type of a tax, right? Different.
I'm saying it's like mafia thing.
But that's what it is. It's essentially
Right, I'm saying part of the thing is that you pay you in return to the king, and in return, he protects you from the
foreign. Yeah, it's not quite like that.
I know the Rambam doesn't say that.
I mean, maybe sometimes you could have something like that, right? But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about mosque. We're talking about tribute.
Also, what if, like, the king is going to, like, come, like, you know, be an independent or something,
if he's not being taxed? Like, if they tell them that the patient will be... Which, right, that is likely in the background here.
Yeah.
And, yes, in the medieval Chuvot, a lot that is discussed, right? Let's leave it for a second.
Okay?
Because Adam says, okay, wait. So the Rambam believes that one type of ptur that Talmidei Chachamim get is on functional taxes, so they don't need it. Another type are things that seem to be honor-related where they're exempt because the Gemara has a second category, which is honor. But Adam correctly notes that that the careful read of Ezra introduces a third possibility, which is that maybe the reason that Tamid Chachamim are Pater is because they already contributed. Yes, Yonadan. None of you are ever going to let me finish my thoughts. Yeah? I feel like I'm being filibustered here. Yeah, okay. Yes? Yes, we know you said that. And I told you who says that. Chasam Sofer. Very good. Hold that thought. Hold the thought. Today, I want to make sure I get through Rambam. If I get through nothing else, I'll be fine. But I want to at least see Rambam. Page 661, the last two halachot in Hilchot Shemitah v'Yovel. Okay? I want to read you these halachot. Okay? I want you to tell me what the Rambam just did and where he got it from. Okay, ready? Everyone ready? Does someone want to read it? Or someone, what? Shemitah v'Yovel, Perek Yud Gimel, Halacha Yud Bet, and Yud Gimel. Okay? Let me read it. Let me read it so that I can just watch your reaction as I read it, okay? V'lama lo zacha Levi b'nachalat Eretz Yisrael u'vivizata imechav. Why were Levi'im not given a portion in the land of Israel or in spoils? Mipnei shehuvdal avoded Hashem l'sharto. Because they were separated to work for God. V'loharot rachava yisharim u'mishpatav atzadikim, to teach the Torah, the rabbim, to the public, sh'nemar yoru mishpatech le'yakov v'torach l'Yisrael. And therefore they were separated from the ways of the world. They don't go to war, Kishai Israel, like other Jews. They don't get an inheritance in the land of Israel. They're the army of God. God blessed his army, his legion. V'hu baruch, hu zocheh lohem, shenemar, nichel chelkechov v'nachalcha. God is their portion. Okay, so far does this tell us anything about our sugya? Not at all. Not a little bit, for Levium. Very good, which are mentioned in the Pasuk in Ezra. So in Ezra we find out that Levium are exempt because they are traded. But remember, what did the Gemara do? The Gemara very bizarrely brought up a pasuk about Levim and Kohanim as a reason for Tamidir Chum to be exempt. And we said, what are you doing? Watch how the Rambam read this Gemara. Look at the last Allah. Let me read it. Below Shevet Levi Bilvad. And this doesn't only apply to actual Levites. Elakol Ish Va'ish. Mikol Balei Olam. But any human being. Asher Nadva Rucho Oto. Whose spirit has led him, v'hevino madao, and he understood by his wisdom, libadel amod lefnei Hashem l'sharto, to separate himself and serve God, ulavdo, and worship him, ladad et Hashem, to understand God, v'halach yashar kamo sha'aso elokim, and go in the straight way that God has commanded, uparak me'al sovaro el chashbonot ha-rabim, asher b'kshu b'nei adam, and no longer concerns himself with normal business dealings and concerns as you regular people. Hareza nitkadesh kodesh kodashim, he has become sanctified. V'hyeh Hashem chelko v'nachlato le'olam lo'omei olamim, and God is his portion forever and ever. V'yizkeh lo ba'olam hazeh davar ha-maspik lo, and will be given in this world what he needs. Kemo shezarcha l'kohanim l'vim, just like the kohanim l'vim. Hare David Omer, Hashem minaschal kivichosi, ata tomech gorali. So suddenly the Rambam introduces this possibility that what is true of Kohanim and Levim, that they exempt themselves from all taxes and all obligations and all army and all contributions to society because they're too busy working for God and therefore they've already made their contribution to society. The Rambam is mechadesh in the last halacha that anybody who chooses that lifestyle gets the same exemptions as Kohanim and Levim. And suddenly, What did we discover? Oh, yes, philosophically great. But what do we discover in terms of our sugya? What? And therefore, remember I said at each stage of the Gemara, I said, wait, at what stage of the Gemara it implies that at least need-based taxes, the reason Tamidei Chachamim are exempted is because they're potter. At another stage in the Gemara, it implies that there are even more expansive exemptions that apply to Tamidei Chachamim when it's dishonorable for them. Labor taxes and certain types of tribute, right? And yet there's a third indication from this case in Ezra that another reason why they might be exempt from certain types of service or taxes is because they have already contributed to society in a spiritual way, and that's recognized. And guess what? The Rambam mentions the exemption of Tamidei Chachamim and the like in three places, in Mishneh Torah, in Hilchot Shechinim, in Hilchot Talmud Torah, in Hilchot Shemitah V'Yovel, and he introduces in each of those three different conceptual justifications, each more expansive than the next, even though I didn't do it in order, so in the way I presented it, in ascending order. And guess what? Every single residence that we saw in the Gemara as a possible rationale for the exemption of Talmud Chacham, which at each stage we noted would be more expansive than the theme that the Gemara started with, the Rambam seems to have, in fact, accepted. Right? And therefore, I think the way the Rambam read the sugya is the way we have just read it for the last 3 days, which is the Rambam thought that when the Gemara introduced new proofs, when the Rambam realized that those proofs didn't support the opening thesis, he didn't just say, it's being lav dafka. What did he do? He understood that by introducing those tzukim, it was introducing a new layer to this argument, a new rationale with different parameters. And therefore, the Rambam has introduced three different parameters with different implications for the exemption of the Ptur Talmud Chacham from taxes. In Hilchot Shechinim, where he's only talking about need, what does he say? If they don't need it, they don't pay. And the end, he hints at the exemption of Kavod, which he fleshes out, not in Hilchot Shechinim, because think about it. The main exemption that he talks about in the Hilchot Shechinim, which talks about taxes and mutual responsibilities, there, which types of exemptions is he going to detail? Those that are about necessity. Where does the Rambam mostly talk about the laws of exemption that come from Kavod? In Hilchot Talmud Torah, because this is a much bigger picture. It's not really about taxation. It's about our posture towards Tamidei Chachamim. And then in Shemitah V'Yovel, he introduces this third and the most expansive category, which is, it could be that the reason that certain types of super-duper Tamidei Chachamim get exemptions is because their life is committed to Talmud Torah, and therefore they've already made their contribution. Now, it does seem to be that those are different types of Tamidei Chachamim, right? Because here he's talking about someone who has left the world behind and has contributed himself entirely to Talmud Torah and public education and things like that. So that seems to be even more expensive because it exempts you from the army, etc. Yeah. So the Rambam isn't talking about supporting them, right? He never talks about supporting them. He talks about making their life easier by exempting them from other things. He never talks about supporting them. The Rambam doesn't believe in that, right? So you have to be very careful. Well, because that, the Rambam thinks, is, okay, I wasn't going to do this, but fine. Turn to Hilchot Talmud Torah Perek Gimel Halacha Yud. I'm hoping that I got that right. Let's see if I did. Oh, yeah. Look at that. Perek Gimel Halacha Yud. So the Rambam says, this is page 126 in the one volumes. See, you make me do things that I wasn't going to do, but now I'm going to do them. Fine. I was not going to touch this sugya at all with a 1,000-foot pole. No. Just because it isn't our sugya and we'll get caught up in it. I have no problem with the sugya. I've taught it before. In fact, it was my final paper for halacha in 10th grade with Rabbi Feder. He made us do a halacha project. I had a lot of fun with it, I remember. It was supposed to be, I think it was supposed to be like at least like 2 pages of Makarot or something like that. But I still remember it was the first time I researched something independently. I remember giving in my 17-page research paper in 10th grade on this sugya. I have wonderful memories of this sugya. Which is, by the way, this is when I'm now, as I tell you these, I'm pulling this out of, this is like stored back in my high school memory, files. But yes, it is, but the Rambam is still there 20 years later. He's still in the same place, hasn't moved. Perikim Allah Yud, where the Rambam says, Kol amisim al libo sheyasok batara velo yaseh melacha. Anyone who says they're only going to learn Torah and not do work, via parnes menat staka, and be supported from staka, harezeh chilel et Hashem. That person has desecrated the name of God, uvazar atorah, and disgraced the Torah, v'kiva me'or hadat, and extinguished the light of religion, v'garam harala latmo, and caused evil to himself, v'natal chayav min ha'olam, and has removed his life from this world, because you are not allowed to benefit from Torah in this world. And the Rambam seems to think that there's a difference between benefiting from Torah in an active way and a passive way. Right? Meaning, I can't take money for Talmud Torah. People can respect me and therefore let me do business and then, you know, leave the market and go back to learning, but I can't take money from Talmud Torah. Anyone who benefits from Talmud Torah removes his life from the world. And this is, by the way, where the main Rambam comes up. It's not here, but in Perish and Mishnayot, but you don't have it in front of you, so we'll have to deal with the summary. Is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, lo ta'asem artaral hitgadel behem velo kardom lachbor behem. Don't make the Torah a crown to glorify yourself in, nor a shovel to dig with. And it said love work and hate authority. Rabbanut means authority, right? You can hate the rabbinate too, but it means authority. And any Torah doesn't have work with it will eventually be nullified. And this person will eventually be a thief. And it's a great thing for people to be supported from their own work. And it is what the great pious ones did. And this is how you merit all good in this world and the next. If you eat of the sweat of your brow, it praiseworthy are you and it is good for you. And it's good for you in the world to come. Now, I will point out that the Rav Moshe was once asked about this in a very odd tshuva. Not odd. The vehemence with which he answers this is very odd to me. Where he was asked, well, what about Kollel? Doesn't the Rambam think it's a terrible thing? So he says, not only is it mutter, but I still remember this formulation. I remember seeing it the first time. I was like, I had this picture of my 15-year-old self reading this tshuva of Rav Moshe and my jaw dropping at the ambitiousness of this tshuva. And the Rambam, and someone asked him, but what if you know you could go to Kollel, but you don't want to go to Kollel because you want to be machmir like the Rambam. So Moshe says, "V'kol elu hamitchadim mitzad shitat haRambam." All those who want to be pious like the Rambam, "Hem holchim ba'asat hayetzer hora," are following the advice of the evil inclination, "virotzim levatel Torah," and want to just right? Nullify the Torah, .. I remember reading that, which was shocking to me, that he could say that someone who wanted to be machmir like the Rambam was evil, and following the Arizara, it disturbed me then, it disturbs me now. No matter how many times I read that Jew for the Rambam, just in Ramosha, it disturbs me. But you can look at it. It's kind of like Bet Shuva Kuf Tet Zayin Yaradea. In Zachor Lenechad. Still, I'm pulling out my high school files. It's like, it feels very weird for me. Like, I'm like, I really feel myself like going back in time to like Rabbi Feder's classroom. Like, second floor Rambam, the classroom all the way by the stairs on the 209. Yes, 209. I'm back in room 209 right now, handing in my like pile of makarot. The first time I ever like taught myself to research a halachic sugya. I think the paper was 17 pages, and I think it was like 42 pages of makara that I gave him, a mashu. I have been a little bit neurotic about sources since basically 10th grade. And I'm like, but I'm actually, it's very funny for me. I'm like having deja vu, where I'm mamish reliving like 10th grade. And I'm also reliving being in the Kollel in Gush, where I had to give shir on this topic, where I did the same thing. I went back to my 10th grade self and then tried to condense my like 10th grade self to give shir. It was like, it's a very weird experience for me. I'm experiencing all these moments at once. It's very funny for me. Yes. Yonatan. Sorry. I've gone back to high school right now. It's like, and at least the Rambam guys understand what I'm talking about. Like, you know exactly where I am. Like,
so the Rambam is saying this is only applicable to someone who is not contributing anything to
the society. Very good. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Yes. And so the Rambam's critique of people is not, right, is people who choose to rely on society and not work at all, right? But the Rambam doesn't think that you can take money for Talmud Torah, right? Because he doesn't think that's a job. You're right. Everyone asks on the Rambam, but what about the fact that there's a long list of rabbis and things like that in Hanami? Lehalacha, right? It's not clear we postulate like the Rambam,
yeah,
right? Right. Oh, for sure. I'm not postulating right now. Like I said, I don't want to go down this route right now. But what I want to point out is that even the Rambam, who is the most Harif on this point, very clearly doesn't think that taking money for Talmud Torah is the same as getting advantages by virtue of your status. The Rambam thinks that's fine, right? He thinks that being exempt from taxes, that's fine, right? It's taking money for Talmud Torah the Rambam doesn't want, right? Okay, before I take Ezra's question, by a quick show of hands, right? Is anyone convinced, right, that the way we read the Rambam, the way we read the Gemara, right, where we noted at each stage that even though the Gemara never told it to you, the Gemara at each stage introduced a new thesis, right, which is potentially more expansive than its original line, where we said it could be that it's all lav dafka, or it could be that the Gemara, without telling you, is introducing layers, right? How many people, having read the Rambam's three presentations of this, in each case expanding the scope of the exemptions, how many people are convinced that the Rambam did something along these lines when he expanded the exemption, justified it in different ways, right? So, right, this is why I said it took us like 3 hours to do this. But when I said, read the Gemara carefully, because the Gemara is not telling you honestly what it is doing. And if you read it carefully and take each line seriously, introducing a new conceptual layer with implications, right? That is exactly what I think the Rambam did in this sugya, which is why he ends up introducing three different models, which apply seemingly to different types of Talmidei Chachamim, different types of taxes, different types of contributions, right? That is, in the end of the day, what I think the Rambam did here, right? And the end of the day for the Rambam has a very limit, right? So Remember, we thought this whole sugya at first glance was just about, oh, taxes are just about what you need. You're paying for services. In the end of the day, for the Rambam, that is a very small picture of the sugya. But now I want to throw out one more thing, and then I'll take Yonatan's question and Ezra's question. And this might answer what Yonatan asked me before, which is, okay, we've identified three strains here in the Rambam's thought, which all emerge from the Gemara. Are they mutually exclusive or not? Yes. Meaning, is it that the Rambam thinks there are three layers, there are three reasons they're potter, and each of them applies in its own case, or does the Rambam think that there are three svaras, each which has a primary implication, but the existence of the other one acts as a secondary reason to cement the exemption in? What do I mean? No one's going to ask me before. What if I could identify a different group in society that doesn't utilize a particular service? Would they be exempt? So, you could say, well, yes, they don't get the exemption from Talmud Torah and Shemitah and Yovel. But the Rambam in Hilchot Shchinim, when talking about the very localized security tax, seems to be making a need-based argument. And maybe you could entertain the possibility that if I had a group that built their own wall, they don't need the security tax either, and therefore they don't have to pay. Right? That's if you think the Rambams are all distinct. But there's another way of reading the Sugya and the Rambams, which is as follows. Maybe the fact that the Gemara specifically wove these together and never explicitly said we're doing different things is teaching you something slightly different, which is, yes, there are three arguments as to why Talmid Chachamim are exempt. But if you only had one by itself, you wouldn't invoke it at all. Meaning, if I had a group that the only reason to exempt them from the security tax is they built a private wall, so if you thought that need-based exemptions were sufficient, so then they might also be patur. But if you think that in the back of the Rambam's mind or the Gemara's mind, what he's saying is, look, if someone doesn't really need the tax, plus I have a reason to exempt them because of kavod and because they contribute to the community. So the primary reason that they're exempt is for need. But there are other things that are sort of floating around in the background, and it's only that combination of factors that brings me to the point where I objectify and formalize that exemption, so then you'd say somebody else wouldn't be able to take advantage of it. Because it's not, right, it's primarily about need, but the reason we formalize it for Mitzachamim is because in the background of our minds there are other reasons we might exempt them. It might not be sufficient, but it's sufficient to work together, all of these reasons together, to create a category. But that might therefore not be enough for the category of people who already built their gate around their house. And this is what I'm not sure about in the Rambam. Is the Rambam thinks these are three different rationales or three primary rationales that only function because they each sort of partake of the other ones, right? The hint to this is simply that the Gemara, that the Rambam in Hilchot Shchinim, right? The first half is about need, but then he brings in the kavod one in the second half of halacha. And the Rambam Hilchot Talmud Torah, even though it's about kavod, also Toch Kedei mentions the security ones, right? So it could be that the Rambam thinks there are three primary reasons, but it's only because they all function in the background that it makes sense to create a category called Talmidei Chachamim. And if that's the case, then you can't expand it to other people just because they fit one of the three criteria. Ezra. Well, what? Yeah, for sure.
Also, I feel like from the fact that they were supporting who don't benefit, you give them the money back, and also the fact that people pay variably based off of
that we have it correct. So I think Ezra's right. The fact that there are other categories of people that do get some exemption, right, shows that these are not limited only to Talmud Chacham, But the fact that we do Yisomim, which are also a category, might say, okay, it's somewhere in between. It's not only Tamei Chachamim, but it has to be, like Yisomim, it's also not only because they don't need it, it's because we generally exempt them from anything that we don't have to obligate them in, right? So it could be that there are certain categories of people where there are multiple things working together, right? And that's what you learn. So maybe it's, right, that's a middle position. It's not only Tamei Chachamim, and it's not anybody who doesn't need it, but it's any category that has multiple factors pushing towards it, then yes. Correct. There are other indications of sugya that need is necessary, but it might not be the only factor.
And also,